It's the Fan pregame Wednesday night ahead of a big one, Maple Leafs and Lightning at 7 p.m. A playoff clinching scenario for the Leafs if they can get one single point tonight. Frank Saravelli is going to join us for a Stanley Cup power ranking segment in 5 minutes.
Another Toronto team, because there's three in action tonight, are the Toronto Blue Jays. And it feels like another knife edge moment early on in the season for the Blue Jays with a win tonight versus the Astros. A 4-3 record to start the season with stops in both Tampa and Houston. Blue Jays discussion with none other than Dan Schulman ahead of the Astros at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We'll do our best bets a little later, and if you have a future on Matthew scoring 70, like myself, you'll want to hear what Sheldon Keefe had to say about load managing him down the stretch.
And we're radio only at 7, so stick around. We'll touch on a few more topics, but first, I'll ask you, Ailish, what makes a Stanley Cup contender? We're about to do it with Frank, but for you, what makes a Stanley Cup contender?
A game breaker.
Really? A single individual makes a Stanley Cup contender? That's an interesting take.
That's the first one that comes to mind. Somebody that doesn't matter what position, whether that's the best goaltender in the series, the best player, the best coach, the best defenseman, somebody that can be the game breaker. And I think we will go through our rankings with Frank, and all of our teams, most likely, will have somebody that will be swaying this playoff series, this matchup, whether it's first round, second round, Stanley Cup final. They need to be the top player in the series and perform like it. So I would say the first thing is a game breaker, maybe having a good goaltender and some puck luck.
I would say, not to disagree with you, but who was the game breaker for the Vegas Golden Knights last year?
LTIR.
That's a good point.
Well, I'm looking at it. Yeah,
I mean, breaking the rules for sure.
How many people thought the Vegas Golden Knights were going to win the Cup last year?
Some, I would say.
I don't think they're going to win the Cup this year. They're not in my top five. So the way I'm looking at my top five in terms of going to win this time around, I'm picking teams that I think have that game breaker. It's not traditionally how every single Stanley Cup has ever been won, but a majority of times there's somebody that is a game breaker.
Okay, that's fair. For me, it's just like being in playoff games. Winning and losing playoff games is like the most important thing to having success in playoff games, because it is different, as we know. So if you have no experience at that level, if you don't know what it feels like to be in playoff games, then it's going to be hard to win not just one game, one series, a couple series, but four series, 16 games. You can't just
Vegas
go in
Knights
cold.
Just did that as an expansion team.
Well, I'm not talking about like 20 years down the road. I don't think Jonathan Marchessault was affected by what was happening in the NHL 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. They had plenty of experience. They played in a Stanley Cup final in their first year. You're right. There was no experience there. But the Vegas Golden Knights didn't win until their sixth year. And after accruing a ton of experience in playoff games and understanding what it means to win playoff games. Mm-hmm. So winning and losing, it's not just, hey, who had success last year is going to have success this year. It's who's accrued enough experience, situational know-how, understanding what playoff games feel and look like and how to win them. I think that's the most important thing when trying to design a Stanley Cup winner.
How about their path?
Path's important.
Because there are a lot of teams that are really, really good on the West Coast. And when I'm trying to decide, when we do our ranking, the team that I think could win the Stanley Cup, I tried to do a little, like, roadmap, and I kept getting stuck at, well, that one's going to beat the hell out of this one, and there'll be limp into the finish line. So I think the path is interesting, and whether you're going to be facing, you know, David or Goliath in the first round, if you're peaking at the right time, I think these things are all small factors of what makes a Stanley Cup contender, and there'll be a couple teams able to put themselves on the map. Our next guest, Frank Saravelli, is joining us from dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, thanks for jumping on. How's it going this week?
I'm good. I love this debate because I think there's so many interesting things to pick at, and there's going to be some really fascinating test cases this year. Vancouver really doesn't have any of that playoff experience that you were talking about, Justin. And I would say, you know, Ailish, when you're talking about needing to peak at the right time, maybe that's not a real thing. The Florida Panthers quite literally lost their way into the playoffs last year. If not for the Pittsburgh Penguins absolutely gagging on it in the last week of the regular season against the Chicago Blackhawks, the Panthers wouldn't even have made it.
Yeah, I think that is the tricky thing here. Like, I tried to build some criteria, and I'm going to ask you about your criteria in a second here, Frank. Of course, we're all going to list our five Stanley Cup contenders or the teams that we feel most confident in winning. But there's no, like, historical checkpoints to just immediately grab and know and believe and have full confidence that they are going to do well in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, it just doesn't work that way. I will say one of your colleagues, Matt Larkin, did write about this and did have some things like, you know, total weight and, you know, there's some
like weight of their bodies.
Yeah, like the heaviness. Heaviness would be a big thing. And if you're Vegas, maybe they leaned on heaviness. Like, there are things that do translate to success. But, like, you look at Vegas last year, Vegas stumbled. Like, there's no metric that made them look like a Stanley Cup contender in the last 6 weeks, 2 months of the season. Like, nothing would point you in their direction immediately. You really have to sift through it, and you have to compare it to things that have happened in the past. And there is not an immediate correlated thing, at least for me. But you're smarter than I am, Frank. You're smarter than both of us. Like, is there something when you're trying to assess, other than the eye test, what makes a Stanley Cup contender? Like, is there anything you could pull from a spreadsheet that makes you feel some way about a team's chances to win?
No. And I've never heard anyone explain the randomness of the Stanley Cup playoffs better than Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon. I had him on my podcast last year, and he said, and this is a paraphrase, but he said basically that the Stanley Cup playoffs are four rounds of seven individual coin flips. And there's really no rhyme or reason as to who breaks through. I mean, here's the perfect example in your own market. The Leafs 2 years ago played a better first round than they did last year. And look which one they won and look which one they lost. It doesn't really make sense most of the time. And so that's why we end up with not only surprising runs, but this exact conversation where if it was easy to figure out what the formula is, someone would be smart enough to, you know, duplicate that every single year with those ingredients. And it just doesn't happen. But for me, the best way that I can sort of draw a circle, a really small circle at that, around the teams that I think have authentic chances to win is your knowing that it ramps up a significant amount, is your game translatable to how different regular season hockey is compared to the postseason? And part of that is heaviness. Part of it is physicality. Part of it is experience and depth. I mean, there's a lot of those sort of, you know, telltales that go into the ultimate, you know, team that's left standing at the end of it. And there's also at times just a pure war of attrition. I mean, look at the final last year specifically. Those Florida Panthers, they were beat to hell. I mean, Brady Tkachuk had to help Matthew out of bed in the morning. And you're talking about players that not only played through the series, but were out all the way until December of the following season by nature of this offseason surgeries that they needed to have. So there's a million things that go into it.
I tried to distill it to three, and I'm going to be a little selfish, and I'll throw mine at you here, Frank. My criteria, just in this exercise, again, trying to pick five Stanley Cup contenders, hopefully you have the winner within that list. Recent playoff series wins, last 5 years. Current form, so dating back to March 1st, what your record is, and have you addressed issues based on your previous failure? So were you able to go out and get a score if you couldn't score enough last time in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Those are my three criteria. That spit out my five teams. Ailish, you just mentioned sort of what you were working on. Mm-hmm. Your quick criteria?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really go as analytical
it's okay.
as you or
it's okay.
like Professor Cuthbert. Kind of feel, kind of eye test, really. And teams that have been good and have maintained a steady level of being good. I tried not to pick the teams that were peaking but I did take some teams off my list that are doing the opposite. So I think we'll have some interesting, let's just show everybody. Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's get to the list. We'll start with you, Frank. You're number five.
The Carolina Hurricanes, they added a game breaker. They have some of that playoff experience that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Pyotr Kochetkov has been excellent really since January 1st, 921 save percentage. I like just about everything about the Canes, but the fact that they haven't broken through to this point yet doesn't mean they can't. Look at Washington, St. Louis, some of these other teams that it took them a while to do so. Maybe this is their year. This is the other tough part about the five, guys, is that depending on the matchup, at least two of the teams of my five are guaranteed to be eliminated after round two, which makes the kind of overall adventure or exercise a little bit of a crapshoot.
Yeah, you can blame Justin. It was his idea. I have the Canes. Of course, Justin has the Canes in a very different spot. But one thing I liked about the Canes was, I mean, they're 8-1-1 in their last little stretch here. Mm-hmm. And they probably will play the Capitals or the Flyers in the first round at this point. And, I mean, that's a pretty good matchup to start yourselves off with, but it does get messy down the stretch. My fifth team are the Vancouver Canucks. I needed to have a Canadian team in there. I'll say that straight up. They were my only Canadian team. Demko coming back soon, I'm hoping, keeps them in this running. And I think Rick Tocchet would probably make sure that this team gets far. Like, I think I really liked his coaching style, so I'm putting him in there. If he's one of the best coaches in the league, you can probably get your guys cooking. But they are number five. So,
Justin. Where are you at on the Canucks, Frank?
My spoiler alert is that I don't have any of the Canadian teams in my top five. I know. Before someone sits there and says, look at this dumb American, the team that I would have in the sixth spot for me is Edmonton. Mm-hmm. I don't really love that matchup, even just getting out of round one.
Yeah.
As it stands right now with Vegas. I mean, it's exactly what I thought it might be. To me, it's a coin flip. Maybe shaded like 52-48 Edmonton. Vancouver's play and the sort of alarms that Rick Tocchet has been sounding, especially after last night's game, to me was really interesting. And look, for as lack of talk or chatter as there has been about the Leafs, 17-6-1 since All-Star, and we did a huge breakdown on my show today where we looked at how physical they've been, second in the league in hits since then. Maybe there's a translatability to playoff success, and maybe it's in some year that, you know, we're not really looking at the Leafs to go on a deep run. But for me, I just think the road is too, you know, too challenging for the three Canadian teams that are going to make it.
Yeah. My model did not like the Vancouver Canucks very much. Just one series win the last 5 years on an 8-4-1 run right now, but it feels a lot worse than that. I guess they were winning some games, early on in March because they haven't been doing so well lately. They did address some issues. They brought in some bodies, but I just don't think they're ready to win four series in a row. So they're not going to be on my list. One team that did grade out though, is maybe the most successful team over the last 5 years. Tampa Bay Lightning are number five on my list. They're not even in a division spot right now, but 11 series victories in the last 5 years, including two Stanley Cups. 9-2-1 run right now, and they are one of the hottest teams, even if you distill it to the last 10 games or so. And they've added bodies. Duclair's been good. Matt Dumba, maybe not the guy who's going to win you a Stanley Cup. But the Lightning are still the Lightning, I think, and they grade out well, so they're number five for me.
I mean, I'm not going to argue against the pillars that they have. I just don't think they're as good on paper as a lot of the other teams, and that's the other fun part about this is you can throw that paper out the window.
Who's number four for you?
Number four is the New York Rangers. Part of it's the Igor Shesterkin effect. Mm-hmm. Part of it is, I think, from my opinion, the best right shot defenseman, all three of them top to bottom in hockey. The bread man, he transcended into Curb Your Enthusiasm. So for me, the Rangers deserve a little extra pump, and they could honestly win the President's Trophy. And another thing that people like to rail on, but if you look back in history, 25% of Stanley Cup winners have won the President's Trophy. So if you're telling me that there's, you know, an omen that you can look for, I'll take a quarter in what's really a random exercise more years than not. I like the Rangers.
I have the Rangers a little higher on my list, but I do like them a lot. I got the Hurricanes in my fourth spot. Kind of just touched pretty close to where Frank was at, so not too much more to add, but Hurricanes four.
Yeah, I don't have the Rangers. I don't have the Rangers on my list. Two series wins last five. They didn't really add anyone of consequence, and they lost last year in the first round. I feel like that
will... Did you see where they are currently in the standings?
I get it, but we talked about the regular season and the playoffs being different.
Two series wins in the last five, they were rebuilding.
I understand, but the most important thing that I could take out of it is that they didn't do anything to change the complexion of this team, and it wasn't good enough to get past one round last year.
Well, hold on. They absolutely went out the last few years and spent a ton of future assets from the Andrew Kopp deadline, mm-hmm, with Frank Vetrano that year to Artemi or Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko. I mean, what more do you want the Rangers to do? They didn't have the success. Now they kind of stand pat and make some smaller moves. Wenberg down the middle has 3C, and that's not good enough for you either?
Listen, no one said my model was perfect.
It's not.
It's not perfect. I mean, I do like the Rangers. They didn't grade well on this, though, so I'm leaving.
Okay, so where are you at
that? Number four, and we got to move a little quicker. Oilers, three series wins in the last 5 years. Of course, they went to a Western Conference final, so they felt what a winner feels like in that Colorado Avalanche that year. They are hot right now. They added a bunch of players, so they've addressed every single issue, or at least that I've laid out. They meet the criteria, Edmonton's best chance for Canada to get a Stanley Cup.
Okay, spoiler alert, Justin and I both have number three the same. So we both have the Dallas Stars as our third best odds or best ranking to win the Cup. Who do you have, Frank?
I have the Colorado Avalanche. I love their deadline. I thought it was a stroke of genius by Chris McFarland, their GM. They helped themselves now and for the future. There's really not much to dislike about the Avs and the way that they play. They're in your face. They're fast. They're skilled. They're deep. And they're big. And that part, you know, certainly sticks out to me. The one question mark for me is I'm not exactly a huge Alexander Georgiev believer. Mm. But the thing is, they got by with probably the worst goaltending to win the Cup 2 years ago, so I'm not sure that it matters.
Yeah, that I've struggled with this next three spots, and I've kind of gone back and forth, and it's all been based on whose goaltender do I believe in the most. And I got to believe in my Bulgarian boy, Georgiev, because...
The Bulgarian blocker.
Yeah, that's my boy. Half Bulgarian, so I got to cheer for him whenever I can.
Is he your number one?
The Avalanche are my number one.
Okay, so you're...
I am going to ride that. I told you off air, I wanted the Stars in that spot, and I went back and forth, and we had to just put it up on the video board, so I was like, duh, descended.
Yeah.
But I feel very close about those.
I mean, I think we're splitting hairs at the top a little bit. I love the Avalanche. They grade out very well. They've done it before, which means something, and they've done it before, as you mentioned, Frank, without great goaltending. So, yeah, the Avalanche can definitely win a Cup. No one would really argue
with that. But you're number one.
My number one is the Carolina Hurricanes. I mean, they're number one because they've won a series in each of the last 5 years. They're playing really well. They got the best record in the NHL since March 1st when I laid it out. And they went out and addressed the thing that was in every way stopping them from having any success in the playoffs, which was they didn't have the goal scoring. I think Jake Guentzel can score enough. If I liked Evgeny Kuznetsov more, I would be more stronger in this and separating them from the Colorado Avalanche. But I think the Hurricanes have just set themselves up for this and to break the tie with the other two teams I have in the top three. I do think they have the easiest path.
Okay, so we need to know Frank's two and one. I think he's frozen a bit. Because
so two, oh, yeah, I think my, you're I don't good. Know if I'm lagging a little
we
bit.
We hear you good. We got you now.
So two, I have the Florida Panthers. I just think their game translates really well. They went on that run last year. They know what it takes to win. I know these, you know, eight losses in their last 10, not great, but, Panthers too. And for me, I went with the Dallas Stars at one. I picked them to win the Stanley Cup before the season started. I don't really see any reason to deviate from that. Look at their depth. Look at the fact that they have a potential, or he's going to be knocking on the door of being a 30 goal scorer in Wyatt Johnson and their three hole at center. Their defense is great. It's mobile. They added a different element in Chris Tanev. And I know his numbers are just sort of pedestrian this year, but Jake Ottinger has been a great playoff performer and the Stars have gotten to a Cup final before. So for me, I don't see any reason to go against the Stars.
Yeah, we both like the Stars. We had them three on our list.
I wanted to move the Stars up.
Not much separating three from one, at least I think for both of us. Mm-hmm. But I think it's notable, Frank, that you have the Panthers on your list.
You're the only one that believes
in the Panthers. And we don't. I would have had them number one if I haven't seen what I've seen over the last 2 weeks where they just look horrible. For that reason, they didn't grade out for me. Ailish, why didn't you have the Panthers?
Yeah, I've just watched them kind of fall apart a bit. But I'm kind of galaxy braining thinking maybe they're doing that on purpose. So then they look less threatening. They can play the Maple Leafs, and then they just stomp through everyone and prove us wrong. But 2 weeks ago, this would have looked completely different. That's the fun part of this. And the next 2 weeks, it will look completely different. But Frank, you might be the winner at the end of this if we don't even have the Panthers and they do what they did last year.
So in order for all of us to be right, we need either the Stars or Avalanche, if I'm looking at this correctly? Or the Hurricanes.
I think there's one winner in amidst all of this. I think one of these teams will win the Stanley Cup.
I agree with that. Frank, last one for you. One real question. Lightning, Leafs tonight on Sportsnet. 70 goals is on the table for Austin Matthews. How do you think the Leafs juggle a milestone and load management?
I'd say if he has a shot at it, go ahead, play him. I just think that's the right message to send anyway. I don't know what it's going to mean for seeding or matchup. Probably nothing, but they're kind of locked in, Panthers or Bruins. Doesn't really matter if they finish second, third, or fourth in the division. I'm not a huge believer in the load management thing. I think there's nothing worse as a fan than in the NBA. I live in Philly. If I buy a ticket to a Sixers game, Joel Embiid better be playing. And if he's not, when I go there, because he's sitting out because he wants to rest, like, I just think that's not what pro sports should be. And people, kids, everywhere, everyone wants to see Austin Matthews go for the goals, and no reason to not play him.
I love it. So on board for that. I hope he gets a chance to do it. Frank, this was fun. We'll see how these age. You know, maybe in 2 weeks we'll be all looking like fools.
Not one of us picked the Golden Knights either. So, yeah, like, I mean, I there's tons of possibilities to make us all look stupid.
And you can't believe
they were number six for me.
Count. It's not top five.
It would have been the last
one. And no one picked the Jets. No one had the Jets in their top
five. Nobody
picked
the Leafs. And, you know, we might.
No Bruins either.
Might lose a lot of friends for that. Anyway, Frank, appreciate you coming on. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much.
See you guys.
Oh, that was fun. Good idea, Justin. We'll see how those age. We'll see. You know, you can send your own in at 590-590 or tweet us if you like or don't like our picks. Tonight is a big night. We've got this up on Sportsnet a little later on. It is Wednesday Night Hockey, Leafs and Bolts. Do they still call them the Bolts?
I think they go by okay. Bolts sometimes.
Leafs and Bolts. I think the Maple Leafs are going to come out guns blazing tonight. They have an opportunity to clinch a playoff spot with a single point. I think they're going to win, and Matthews is going to score. That is my best bet for tonight. That's at plus 150. He's chasing 70 goals. We will get into that a little later. We heard from Sheldon Keefe earlier about, you know, the opportunity and how you manage that, and I think it's a really great debate. But I think he's going to want to put the puck in the net while he has time and not leave it for those final three games. So Leafs to win and a Matthews goal is my best bet.
Yeah, obviously a great game on Wednesday Night Hockey. Another really good game on the network tonight, though, on Sportsnet 360. Edmonton visiting the Dallas Stars, two teams that are on my list, my top five list for the Stanley Cup. But it won't be a Stanley Cup offering in net tonight from the Edmonton Oilers. Calvin Pickard will be in goal against the Stars. So for that reason, I'm going Stars money line. Stars minus 125 tonight.
We all love the Stars.
Oh, yeah, we all love the Stars. I mean, they can win a Stanley Cup. And they're hosting Edmonton tonight with Jake Oettinger in net. That's a goaltending disparity for me. So I'm leaning the Stars minus 125.
Okay, amazing. So Leafs and Matthews to win for my little parlay. Justin's going Stars to win as well. All right, so do you feel like you solidified all your picks? Well, I'll say one thing I didn't get is six-man award. Our team on the outside looking in, I do have the Oilers, and I know it doesn't count if it's not in there, shoulda, woulda, coulda, but the Oilers have been an incredible story. I do believe in the story being part of what makes a Stanley Cup contender. There's always something. And, I mean, look at the way that they rallied from nothing to something. Mm-hmm. They have learned fortitude, they have learned trial and error, and I think if there's a team that has gone through hell and come out on the other side, it's the Oilers. So I would never want to count them out.
And the path might be the tiebreaker, right? Like, you didn't have anyone else in the Pacific Division. Oh, you did have the Canucks. So you did Canucks over Oilers. Canucks might have, you know, the first in the division not wrapped up yet, but that definitely helps in terms of their path, and I guess the Oilers would be on the road in a second round series. He mentioned Winnipeg. Yeah, Winnipeg is probably the team that's in a decent position that graded out worse for me. Like, they've had no success recently in the playoffs. They're only 8-8-1 in their last 17 games. They did make additions at the deadline, but it feels like they're kind of running out of steam. And if you're looking up in the Central Division, well, you got Dallas and Colorado, and that's a gauntlet to get through. So for that reason, yeah, Winnipeg was kind of lower on my list in terms of options, at least the lowest among Canadian teams.
Your Stars, a seven-game winning streak, hottest team in the league right now. They're going a little later. But, yeah, the Panthers, a 2-7-1. I don't know if they're just
that smells. Coasting. Some smells about 2-7-1.
If they're coasting in or they're playing the long con, either way. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, if you're watching on Sportsnet, it will shift to Hockey Central. Of course, it'll be Tampa Bay and Toronto. And if you want to stick with us, Fan Pregame, we're going to talk to Dan Shulman up on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, ahead of Blue Jays and Astros.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on The Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Dan Shulman will join us shortly. We're ahead of Blue Jays and Astros, the rubber match. And the internet is ablaze because Babe Schneider is not in the lineup after hitting a beautiful bomb in the ninth inning.
Season-saving bomb?
Honestly, that's not even hyperbole. Like, it could have been.
Mild hyperbole.
Now, that saved the season for now. It was. I was watching it thinking, oh, no, they can't go two games, one being not, no hit, and then one was just another zero on the board. And Babe Schneider comes up, and he hits a beautiful bomb, and he's not in the lineup tonight. And we asked Jeff Blair when we were upstairs. I said, Jeff, explain.
What's the deal, Jeff?
I said, tell me like I'm a five-year-old. Explain it to me like I'm five, like Michael Scott. And he said, well, which, he goes, who's pitching?
Which way does Kristen have your pitch?
And the answer is, he's a righty, so no Babe Schneider. But I don't like the logic. I want to see the kid get out there, and he's earned it.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, there's split stats and whatever.
I thought Ben Ennis put it best on the morning show. I don't know if it was today or yesterday. It might have even been on Bunkus's podcast. But he just said, like, if you can hit a home run, you need to be in this lineup.
Exactly.
And Babe Schneider can hit a home run, and because you need it, right? Like, you're looking at this lineup today: Springer, Guerrero Jr., Bichette, Turner, like. Is that the best top? Whatever. Doesn't matter. Because the problem is beneath that. Then you have Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, Kevin Kiermaier, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Kevin Biggio. Like, you're looking at more than half of the order where there is absolutely no confidence that any of these guys can run into one. Like, I understand that there's potential there with Varsho, like he's done it before. And we've seen the ball go out of the yard off the bat of Kirk and Kiermaier, and they can do it. But with regularity, you don't have that option without Babe Schneider in the lineup, without Davis Schneider in the lineup. If you put him in the middle of that five, if he's batting seventh, then there's at least a chance the ball can fly out of the yard. And it feels right now with this lineup tonight and what the Blue Jays are generally running out there, that when you reach the fifth guy in the lineup, when you're not Turner, when it's after Turner, like, there's just no chance that you're going to see a game-changing moment at the plate for the Blue Jays. And it's so early in the season, but that just feels like the reality. And Davis Schneider is the guy that makes you feel differently about what that lineup could at least be.
It's six games. This will be the seventh game of the season. There has been, it feels like, multiple seasons already throughout this Blue Jays opening two series. And the biggest moments have been great offensive burst, and Vladdy had that unbelievable home run, which they said was 450, but felt like 750. And then there's the lows of the low, getting no hit, getting no offense. And, like, Davis Schneider is a guy that just sparks energy, sparks, obviously, offensive production. In his short stint in playing in the MLB action, he produces offense. And I know lefties, righties. I've never seen
High fastballs.
I've never seen a Blue Jays tweet get ratioed the way that this one is getting ratioed, the starting lineup. And people are like, keep Davis Schneider in the lineup. Keep Davis Schneider in the lineup. Why isn't Davis Schneider in the lineup? And you know what? It's not about making your fan base happy, but sometimes it's just like being like simplifying. I don't know. It's early to be complaining, but I just want to see the kid play.
I think it is too simplistic, though, to be like, oh, Davis Schneider, like, that's the fix, right? That's the thing that's holding this team back. Like, ultimately, Davis Schneider does have holes. I mean, he admitted Hazel May last night.
He's not the real Babe.
He didn't
Schneider.
Throw me a high fastball,
yeah.
So I had a chance up there. And there is a problem
totally
there. Like, this guy isn't a catch-all fix for everything. The fact of the matter is they left themselves shorthanded. Mm-hmm. And only on nights where a certain pitcher's out there where you feel more comfortable or the spreadsheet says, this is Davis Schneider time, are you going to feel at least better than you would when it's the opposite way around? Like, this isn't a catch-all fix, Davis Schneider.
I get
Is that. He a guy that you'd prefer to have in the lineup right now? Yes. But other problems persist. And if you were just running him out there every game, maybe you run into the point where, hey, he's just not getting it done because there is an easy fix for him if you're an opposing pitcher, which is to throw the high heat, which tripped him up. last year once the book was out on him. So yeah, I understand kind of both sides, but the fact of the matter is, like, I just feel like there's no confidence, or not enough confidence, and I guess justifiably so, that there's enough pop and there's enough offense within this Blue Jays team.
So obviously we got our reporter Hazel May down, and she just tweeted out something, just a quote from John Schneider, must be talking right now, on why Davis Schneider is not in the starting lineup. Quote, he is a big part of what we're doing. Six games in, you just want to stay consistent. So there does come a time where you don't want somebody to sit too long. It's like him and Vogelbach. And, okay, Ben Nicholson-Smith also tweeting, while Davis Schneider isn't in the lineup, John Schneider says the Blue Jays are open to seeing him earn everyday at-bats. Today, Jays, just like the matchups, are IKF and Biggio. So that's what they're starting the game with. John Schneider spoke to Davis pregame to check in.
That's another problem with Vogelbach too, right? Like, if you have two players in Schneider and Vogelbach that are so pigeonholed into what they are, well, it just leaves you without flexibility. And I guess if problems persist, and they very well can with a lineup that features Dalton Varsho, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I guess Kevin Biggio to a certain extent, although I'm a little bit more bullish on him than I was at this time last year, well, then, yeah, you're kind of running into the same issues over and over again. And maybe they do pull themselves out of that, as he alludes to. Mm-hmm. But I guess when you're only, you know, seven games into the season, maybe you are sticking with what the plan was coming in.
You jokingly said, like, maybe series or season-saving home run last night. But how do you think we would have been from our morning show to now, trying to decipher where the Blue Jays are at if they had lost last night?
It would be loud, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be loud in this market. It'd be loud on those shows. There'd be frustration already that kind of overtook and overrided much of the thinking all of last year. Like, it would be, it definitely, although it was loud on Twitter today with the announcement of the lineup, it would be louder, and it would be continuing to be loud because the same frustration would remain.
All right, let's bring in Dan Shulman, the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. Dan, so glad to have you on the show. It's been a while since we got to chat. How's it going?
It's going great. Welcome to our fancy booth.
Let's see.
I can give you a little tour.
Look at that.
Oh, there's very that nice. Side, okay.
And then there's that side.
Hello there,
hello.
Sir.
There you go.
That's how we roll.
Okay.
That's the side of the booth you never see.
Well, we appreciate the tour. We are living vicariously through the I guess, the passion of fan base right now about Babe Schneider not being in the lineup. Give us the scoop, because obviously he was the hero last night and he's got the stash and everybody loves him, but he can't play every night apparently.
So what John Schneider said is, you know, they came into the season with a plan, and they want to be consistent this early in the season. They don't want to blow up their plan. I'm paraphrasing, but he talked about consistency. This is the seventh game of the season. He did say, you know, there comes a time where a player can force your hand. And he mentioned Whit Merrifield last year when Whit got hot in the middle of the year. And then he mentioned Davis Schneider when Schneider came up and got hot. When Schneider came up, he was doing like he's doing now. He's playing against lefties. And then he went nuts with the bat. And they put him in there every day. And then he had an 0-for-31. And then he kind of leveled off at the end. But, you know, I totally understand where people are coming from. And the question that I asked Schneider was, the three starters you're going to see in New York are right-handed, and then you go home and you face Seattle, and those three starters are right-handed as well. He's not going to let them sit seven games in a row. He's just not. How often he gets in there, though, it depends. And you know, they just signed Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to a two-year deal, and or does Kiermaier sit and Varsho goes to center? And you know, for everybody who goes in, somebody comes out. So I totally get it, and this team needs offense. This team needs power, and I believe that this guy can hit. And I think in a couple of weeks we might be having a different conversation that he might be playing more. But for now, against righties, I think he's going to play sparingly, and they would use him as a weapon off the bench. I totally get why the fans are frustrated. You know, he's fun, he's lovable, he's cuddly, and he can hit home runs. What more do you want?
that could be his dating bio. Fun, cuddly, and I can hit home runs. What more do you want?
There you go. Sign him up.
There you go. Offensive production obviously was a big offseason discussion. A lot of internal improvement being the mode for this upcoming year. And we've seen a no-hit opportunity for the Blue Jays, and we've seen them have some great offensive production. So where are you at with trying to decipher if there is an offensive concern, and when, how long should we be waiting before we say that? And, you know, obviously you're seeing it up close and personal.
Yeah, I would wait a little bit longer. I think it's possible there will be a concern. I mean, they look great in the spring, and the, you know, the plan and the messaging and the mantra and all that. And it was great. And they did great in the spring. You know, just in the interest of objectivity, I guess. They're playing the Rays and the Astros, right? Like, they're not starting with the with two lousy teams. They're starting with two really good pitching staffs, and then they're going to get the Yankees, and then they're going to get the Mariners. I bet you if we talk right after the Colorado series next week that people might be in a bit better of a mood and the offensive numbers might be a little bit better. But I think this is a challenging stretch, and that's why I would caution, don't make too many big pronouncements or whatever at this point of the season. Let's give them another week or two. I think this offense can be good, but I don't think it is guaranteed to be good. You know, they need Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero to be good. That, like with everything else we want to talk about, they need Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero to be good. That's where it all starts for me. I think Justin Turner's doing a great job. We've all seen that. And then you hope in the bottom half of the order, Varsho, Kiermaier, Clement, Biggio, IKF, Schneider, that enough of those guys contribute that they can turn the lineup over and have men on base for the big guys. So I think it's got a chance to be good, but I think we need a couple more weeks before we can really know what direction they're heading in.
So it was tough sledding, obviously, Monday night, Ronel Blanco throwing the no-hitter. It's funny because we had Madison Shipman in on Tuesday, and she's talking about the athlete's perspective when you kind of understand that something is happening, that you're getting no-hit. If it's early on, if you're an athlete, at least according to Madison Shipman. I think it's different for fans. Maybe they kind of catch on sixth, seventh inning. When's it for a broadcaster? Like, when were you starting to think about that on Monday night?
I Googled how many times have the Blue Jays been no hit after the sixth,
because
I wanted to have that window open on my computer. After the seventh, I Googled how many no hitters have the Astros had. And so I had that window open on my computer, but it wasn't like, so once through the order, no, like, quite frankly, this team has not been very good at all this week or last year, early in games, right? They haven't scored a lot in the first inning. They play from behind all the time. So at the end of three, I wasn't thinking about it. At the end of five and then into the sixth, there was no hard contact. Like, they weren't close. So I would say by the sixth inning, I thought this was a distinct possibility. And the other thing was his pitch count was low. I don't know what it was after six innings, but let's say it was like 72 or something like that. A lot of times a guy will have a no-hitter after six, but he's at 90 already. And then you know he's not going to throw a no-hitter. But he was getting out so quickly and quietly that it did seem like a possibility. And really, IKF hit one ball hard early, and then Biggio hit a hard grounder in the ninth. Those are the only two well-struck balls I remember from the whole night.
Is there like a professional broadcaster protocol of calling a no-hitter, like what you can and can't say? And if you're, you know, you may be broadcasting for the team that's getting no hit, do you no-hitter, because the last time this happened was whatever? Like, how do you go about that?
So it's interesting. So I've had them as an ESPN announcer when you're neutral and national, and the team that is getting no hit doesn't care if you say it. The team where the pitcher is going for the no-hitter, their fans lose their minds. And I don't do this, but you feel like going on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it and saying, well, he just threw the no-hitter and I talked about it, so I guess there's no jinx, right? But the jinx people are the most infuriating group of people in the entire world. So I talked about it constantly the other night because I believe it is my job to inform the audience about what's going on. Not one person said, what are you doing? What are you doing? And in fact, a few people were happy I was doing it because maybe they thought I could jinx Ronel Blanco.
Louder, Dan, louder.
Yeah, but I will tell you, if it were Chris Bassitt or Jose Berríos or Kevin Gausman, if I did the game exactly the way that I did the game two nights ago, I'd get mauled on Twitter. So I am a little bit more careful for the home team. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing but zeros. It's something about the phrase no hitter, mm-hmm. I think, that really sets people off. But again, I want to be clear about this. The jinx people are out of their minds.
Yes, they are.
They're like nuts. They don't know that, but they're out of their minds. So, but yeah, sometimes I think about it. But I didn't two nights ago because it was a Houston guy.
So. First turn through the rotation, not so great for Chris Bassitt. And you say Kikuchi, the meat, I guess, of the order, at least with its current configuration with Kevin Gausman, needing a few more days to get out there. What do you got to see from these two guys to get it back on track? Not to say it was off and back on, but like, if we're going to see that improvement, if we're going to see a quality start from these guys, what do you got to see at least specifically from Chris Bassitt tonight and Kikuchi in the Bronx?
I thought Bassitt was better than the line for four earned runs, five innings, I believe. He had one of the, and he's had about three or four of these innings. He had about three or four of them last year. I think he got ahead of Jose Caballero, the number nine hitter, 0-2, and he tried to run a two-seamer in, and he hit him in the hand. And then Bo Bichette made an error, and all of a sudden, boom, the bases are loaded, and he makes – it's one of those. He made one mistake, and they hit it out of the ballpark. One of those nights, Brandon Lau hits the grand slam. I thought Bassett was better than the line says he was, and from talking to him, you know, he felt pretty good too. So I think he's fine. I think Chris Bassett is Chris Bassett. I didn't think Kikuchi was as good as he can be and he needs to be. He's working on a new pitch. It's funny. Ronel Blanco's working on a changeup, and he comes out and no-hits the Blue Jays, throws like 28 of them, and they're unbelievable. Kikuchi's working on a changeup, and I talked to him the next day, and he's still trying to get the feel of it. And he said to me, I have to keep throwing it. I have to get comfortable. I know where I have to locate it, but he's kind of working through the process still. So I think he's a little bit of a work in progress right now. And he's got three other good pitches. We saw that last year. But he wasn't great. He wasn't good in the spring either. And again, they attributed a lot of that to the changeup. So I'm curious to see how the next start goes. I hope the command is a little bit better. I hope the changeup is a little bit sharper. And I hope there's a little bit more soft contact and quick outs for him because they need him.
So day off tomorrow, and then the Blue Jays will face the Yankees, who are 5-1, and they just took a lead in the 11th inning against the Arizona Diamondbacks. So they're looking really good. Juan Soto apparently wants an Ohtani deal that came out today. Scary,
what, deferred money?
Yeah, well, just a lot of it. Yeah, a bit of a scary start for the Blue Jays in terms of opponents, but when you're looking ahead at these Yankees, we're going to see Stroman as well. It's going to be an interesting weekend ahead.
It will be. Yankees are playing very well. They're a better team than last year. I mean, last year they didn't have Soto. Last year, Judge missed 2 months. Last year, Anthony Rizzo played for 2 months with concussion symptoms that they hadn't diagnosed and then sat the last 2 months. Last year, Giancarlo Stanton didn't hit it, you know, didn't hit. They're better. They're better this year. The Blue Jays will see technically their 3-4-5 starters in Marcus Stroman, Clark Schmidt, and Luis Gil. They wanted Stroman to start opening day, but he was lined up to be number three, so he asked to be there. So he'll pitch in the home opener for the Yankees. But this is a challenging way to start the season, at the Rays, at the Astros, at the Yankees. And then Seattle comes to town with as good a pitching staff as there is in baseball, and their top three starters are going in the series then. So I think after 13 games, there might be a lot of collective angst. But things even out, and hopefully it's a long season, and over time, you know, it's the schedule gets a little bit lighter, things will get better. But I think if they can just keep their head, I thought last night was huge. You know, you guys know, I know, everybody knows how different the discourse is after a Blue Jay win than a Blue Jay loss. And it seems right now the losses are hurting people more than the wins are helping people. And everybody's, you know, a little down on the prospects for this team. So last night was big. To get back to 3-3, everybody was all smiles in the clubhouse today. You know, if they can get through this 13-game stretch, whatever, 6-7, 7-6, just don't be 4-9, right, at the end of 13 games. If they can just keep their heads above water until the schedule lightens, and that'll coincide, hopefully, with the likes of Danny Jansen, Eric Swanson, Jordan Romano coming back. All of them hopefully back within 2 weeks, maybe, if things go well. You know, so the cavalry's coming too. So we'll see where they are in a couple of weeks.
We'll let you go, Dan. But last one, anyone beating UConn?
Men or women? We're talking men, I assume?
Let's talk men.
Yeah.
They're both, actually.
They're both in the Final Four, which is impressive. So, listen, Purdue's great. Zach Edey's great. You don't score 40 in an elite game against a team as good as Tennessee if you're not great and your team's not great. So, but UConn's been the best team all season, and you know, if you're making me pick, I'm picking UConn. So they are tough. They are talented. They play fast. They can shoot the ball. It's just a question of what do you do with Edey? Do you let him get his so you don't have to come off the shooters, or do you double Edey and then risk him passing it around and the three-point guys are open? Every team has to make a different decision. They both got to get to the final, but I'd be very surprised if they don't get to the final. And if you made me pick, I would pick UConn in a very, very close game.
Yeah, Edey versus UConn would be awesome. Hopefully that happens. The tournament definitely deserves that, and it is trending that way. That would be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun watching your call tonight, Dan. We appreciate you jumping on with us before a big game, if it can be big this early. And yeah, we'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
It's Dan Shulman. Zach Edey. We haven't talked very much about Zach Edey, but the way he's dominated this tournament and the way that he doesn't foul. He's huge. He's banging in the paint the entire game, doesn't come off the court, and he never gets himself into foul trouble. Like, if Purdue just, if he gets in any foul trouble, Purdue's toast. And he, yet every single time he goes out there, he never gets in foul trouble. And now they're in the position that they're in. It's pretty remarkable. He's jumping on boards now. Like, he's going to be a first round pick.
This is what I was just about to ask you before this kind of prove it tournament. I mean, people were saying, well, maybe like second rounder, right?
Yeah. Like, kind of just like a fringe NBA
and the Raptors have
prospect in a bad, bad, bad draft.
So the Raptors have probably going to have three picks, right? Or, I don't even know. I don't even know
track.
What they're doing, but they have picks. And now he's really like skyrocketed up there. Obviously he's a Toronto guy. He could be the latest of so many like great Canadian basketball stories in general, but is he going to be a chapter of the Toronto Raptors' great Canadian stories? Like, I think this will be super interesting to watch because they're going to have some big decisions to make. He's the favorite right now for most outstanding player, deservedly. But it's interesting because, you know, Raptors are collecting Canadians. Like, what is it that what do they collect in that movie?
Pokemon cards?
No.
I don't know.
You know, Marvel.
Oh, Infinity Rings
Infinity
or something
Stones,
like that?
Stones,
right? Stones.
God,
I pulled that and I've never seen a Marvel movie, period.
I need somebody to confirm that because that was amazing if we got that right. But you never know.
Yeah, just to wrap, I mean, I think there are worse ways to spend like an early round or early second round pick, late round, first round pick. Like, I feel like there are worse things to do when that guy is that big, that talented.
And that Canadian.
And that disciplined, I was going to say. But yeah, and that Canadian as well.
Producer Mike saying that Raptors have the 6th and the 17th and the 31st pick.
31st is maybe not the 17th.
Is the first pick of the second round.
Yeah. Maybe not the 17th. Maybe the 17th. He's definitely risen higher than that on a lot of mock drafts.
He's the most impressive player. And we've watched a lot of March Madness.
My guy Klingon's going to get him in trouble.
Klingon plus 340 for outstanding player.
He's winning most outstanding.
You think?
Yes.
Well, because UConn's
going to win. No, UConn's going to win, and they're not going to pick Zach Edey with UConn winning the title. Let's quickly shift to the Maple Leafs Lightning Wednesday Night Hockey. We talked about it a little bit with Frank. The Leafs, what sort of lease they're going to put on Austin Matthews in his pursuit of 70 goals? Like, obviously, there's like the fan doing right by the fan, doing right by Austin Matthews, doing right by the entire situation if you're Sheldon Keefe. Mm-hmm. But like, wouldn't it just behoove you to let Matthews chase it? Because if this guy scores 70 goals, don't you think he's going to be feeling as good
1,000%
about himself,
Justin,
as he's ever felt?
Okay, risk and reward is something to think of for a second. The risk is that right now he's at 62 goals. He's got 8 games left. Goal per game gets you there.
Seems doable for Austin
Matthews. And he's good at scoring. So let's say you play it out and you're 2 games away and he's 3 goals away. Okay, so you're kind of in that decision-making period. The last 2 games of the year against the Panthers and the Lightning, who, you know, you might be playing one of them and one's right behind you. Nonetheless, if he can get a couple goals early on and it's within reach, I think it needs to be done. Like, I want to see Austin Matthews score 70 goals because as a fan, it's an amazing experience. As a player, when you hit a milestone like that, which I never have, I can only imagine you are at the ultimate, like, peak mental, physical, emotional level, and you're going into the first round of the playoffs. It kind of makes sense to let that happen if it can. Your team wants you to do it. Your team's talking about it. Everyone's rallying around it. The fan bases, it's the story right now. But I understand the risk is risky. If he slips up and goes into the boards or he's in a little pushing match against the Panthers and Lightning in that final day and, you know, maybe he's a little scuffed up, there is a big risk. It's Austin Matthews, you know? So I totally get the dilemma, but I'm about the story and success, and I want it.
We don't know how he's feeling. Like, he could be banged up, right? Like, he could be dealing with multiple injuries
and
maybe
I'm good.
Rest is good. And maybe he'd rather prioritize the playoffs. And I get that we prioritize the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't lose sight of, like, great things that can happen in sports. And a guy scoring 70 goals this year for the Toronto Maple Leafs would be a great thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And for my future, Ben.
Yeah, I need UConn. You need 70 goals from Austin Matthews.
We're going to make it out alive out of April. We need that stuff. They are about to take action. Leafs and Tampa, 7 o'clock. That's on Sportsnet. You can watch that in a few minutes. We're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll come back with 30 minutes on Sportsnet 590, The Fan only. We're going to talk a little bit about this. We're going to tee up tonight's baseball game. We've got some stuff to go through in terms of the Buffalo Bills. Diggs. We'll be back on the Fan Pregame. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.